Welcome to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today, and we're talking about food media.
Mm-hmm.
And we realized we've been in the business for a quarter century, right? Or more than that, significantly sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And the change has been enormous.
Yeah, it's a huge change.
When I was a kid, I would look through my grandmother's gourmet magazines that she'd mm-hmm. saved, these huge collections of them. You know?
And you still do, don't you?
I do.
Yep, me too. Of course, those are great things, but very different world.
But the world is learning and seeing
instantly.
Instantly.
That's the difference.
Everything about food.
Right now.
I mean, there are a few shots in magazines or in books when I was a kid that like they stick in my brain, like they're just burned there.
Mm-hmm.
But there are thousands and thousands and thousands
of images now.
And everyone's becoming an amateur food photographer.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. I mean, it's one of my favorite things to do. I love photography. I've always had a great interest in it. And I'm excited that that's part of sort of what I get to do now is take photographs of what we do.
You take good ones. I'm the guy that forgets.
Well, you've never had
like
an interest
20 minutes later.
Right. Right.
After I'm completely done, whatever it
you're
is,
like,
oh,
should have taken
a photo of that. So we do have an expert chiming in,
which is super exciting.
One of the really prominent photographers, food photographers in particular, in our region, if not in the country, Scott Suchman. He'll be here the second segment with us, and we are live. We're taking your calls, where you're taking your emails. So if you have questions for us, or if you have questions for Scott, when he comes on board, please send them. It's 410-662-8780 or foremanwolf@wypr.org if you want to email us.
Yeah, I'm really excited that Scott's going to be with us. I can't wait to hear his perspective on how things have changed in his time in his career and, you know, sort of what his, you know, thought process is working now and what he sees in the future, since that's his world. So it's going to be fun to talk to him.
You've been on, I mean, I've done cooking segments and that sort of thing on local television, but you've been on a couple of Food Network
mm-hmm.
programs.
Mm-hmm.
How crazy different is that from what you see on the screen to what your experience is appearing in one of those programs?
Oh, gosh. Well, there's a lot of editing that goes on.
The program is what?
Oh, well, yeah. When I did Bobby Flay, man.
45 minutes
that
or something?
That was a good...
Of content?
Yeah, I got up at 4 a.m. for hair and makeup. I think we were in the studio at 7:30, and I think I left there at midnight. And I don't think I've ever been so tired in all of my life. And I think the crazy thing you don't realize about those, whatever those things are called, the cameos or whatever, when you see the person that's in the show talking about what happened in the show, is that you have to talk in whatever it is, first person or whatever. And I mean, I'm sorry, my brain, I'm left-handed. I don't know what it is. But when they're like, no, you're saying it wrong. And by this time, you're like exhausted.
I'm left-handed, my brain.
my brain doesn't work like other people's or some people's. And I'm like, man, seriously, I have to go back through this entire day and describe everything that just happened. And then they use like a minute of it. But you've gone through the entire show and
I'm
everything
sure you're
that happened.
Entirely
well, you
sick
know
of
how
it.
Patient I am.
Oh, you're so patient.
Yeah, but it's fun though. I mean, the energy of doing a show like that is super fun. I love doing it. I mean, it's a blast, really. And actually, with Bobby Flay's set, the cool thing about that, because you never know what you're walking into when you are, you know, as far as the cooking situation when you're going into a studio like that. What's it going to be like? Does a stove actually work? Does the oven work properly?
Yeah, what kind of tricky stuff did they do to you?
Actually, there was, the tricky stuff was verbal. It wasn't, the cooking apparatus was incredible. I mean, I was super happy. I mean, it wasn't anything crazy, but I mean, the stove was a nice stove. It
everything
worked.
Working is great.
Yeah, exactly. There was a refrigerator, there was a freezer, there was a, you know, a good work area. And that's the other thing. I like a decent work area. You know, you never know if you're going to get like 2 inches to work on or something. And, you know, it wasn't luxurious, but it was right on. And I was extremely comfortable with it. And, you know, like people are helpful. They're there to help you, the crew and everything, and crew's super nice, particularly on that show. So I really appreciated that. And, you know, it was a fun. I mean, I like to perform. So there's a reason why you and I are both on the radio. We both have done a lot of theater and things like that in our past growing up and things. And, you know, it's just fun to do. And the energy is exciting. And having an audience, you know, you actually, when you do that show, you feel like a gladiator because the audience is up around you, above you, and you have your
side.
That's
very different from doing, like, local TV where you do a demo
in a
blank studio.
Right.
And an anchor is somebody runs onto the set with you.
And it's like 2 minutes.
Hi, what's your name? And... you know, and unless you do repeated segments with different people, and I've had a chance to do a bunch of those.
They don't have much of a cooking facility either, so you're really limited as to what you can do on that. But that's the way it is. They're not built to be a cooking show. So
I should apologize publicly. WMAR years ago, I don't think I did anything like this in anyone else's studio on live TV.
Oh boy, what'd you do, Tony?
Well, I seared some shrimp, but you know me, I like to get a pan hot.
Oh, God, do I know you? Yes.
And so
did they have to call the fire department?
No, but they were scared that I was going to set the sprinkler off in the studio.
Oh, my gosh.
There was smoke everywhere. Well, it was spectacular when I saw that.
Yeah. Were you in a cloud? I mean, like, could
this
I didn't
is long
see
enough
show.
Ago that
could you see people on the TV show?
We're working with Allison. Mm-hmm. And there was a cloud. I mean, you could see it on TV. There was just a cloud of smoke that went up in front of the station.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
It was spectacular. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Don't give this man a pan
like heat.
And some
I
fat.
Like heat.
And anything with power.
Just, oh, man. So you can reach us with your thoughts about these things. I'm curious what people are going to ask. 410-662-8780 or email us. ForemanWolf@WIPR.org. And let's go to Ann in Annapolis. Ann, how are you?
Hi, Ann.
Hi, Seth, Cindy. Hi, Tony.
How are you?
This is really interesting that this is all coming together today. And I did want to comment, back in the 90s, I had a cable television food show in Evanston, Illinois.
Oh, wow.
In the days when you had to carry the big camera around with you to do location shots,
mm-hmm.
awesome.
I would go to farmers markets and ask people what they were buying and what they planned to do with them and ask them to be honest, were they just going to let that rot in their fridge?
Oh, you know, I have great affection for you because that's what I want to ask people every when I'm leaving market on this morning and I've got like truckloads of stuff and people that just keep accumulating stuff. And I'm like, you don't know.
But at least they're supporting.
I'm difficult.
It's all
That's good.
All right. Well,
And the other thing that I did was buy weird stuff at the supermarket and taste it on camera. It was, and taste it so you don't have to.
What was the most surprising good thing you tasted? And what was the most disgusting thing that you tasted on camera?
Yeah, the most disgusting thing was yogurt that came with a little cup of gummy worms that you could mix in.
Oh.
That was disgusting. Yeah.
Oh.
And the most surprising thing actually was a salad dressing. It was like when avocado ranch first came out. And it was really
avocado
good.
Ranch?
You know, like ranch dressing
yeah,
in
we
a
know
bottle,
what it
but
is.
It was made with avocado.
Avocado ranch.
And you liked it?
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
I did. You know, dipped
the
cucumber in it. It was good.
I was just really glad when you said the thing about the yogurt and you said the word worms that you said gummy first because I'm like, oh, please tell me she didn't eat yogurt with worms in it. So, yes.
No.
All right. Okay. So you didn't have any, like, horrifying.
I know that insect protein is big, but it certainly was not in those days.
Yeah. No.
So I have a question. It's pretty timely because I'm going to a happy hour this afternoon at a friend's house on the Severn. It's really hot out, as you know. Mm-hmm. It's going to be outside. I'm looking for a hot weather hors d'oeuvre that also looks good because one of the attendees is a food photographer. So I'm under pressure.
Something,
any ideas?
Well, how about ceviche? I mean, we're just so totally into ceviche right now.
Well, there's such spectacular fruit in the market right now, too. Methylate plums that are like blood red
mm-hmm.
would be a cute garnish for ceviche.
Mm-hmm.
The very first.
They're gorgeous colors, the methylate plums. Oh my gosh. I cut like 30 of them yesterday, and each one was a different tone of pink to like.
You're not
going to
let them rot in the fridge, are you?
Oh, no, ma'am.
Yeah, lemon, lime, methylate plum, peach, chilies.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I would
find
definitely
some pretty
do
fish.
Yeah, if you like the idea of doing ceviche, I mean, obviously, you're going to have to ice that thing down. But
exactly. And what I do actually is I put a metal bowl with water, put another metal bowl that's sprayed with cooking spray in that bowl, weight it down, freeze it, so then I have an ice bowl.
You're so smart. That's a great idea. I love that. Good. All right. So, yeah, ceviche or just some sort of great, you know, fruit salad because there are so many.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I can't believe it. My walk-in, we have, like, you know, apricots, nectarines, peaches, methylate plums, a second kind of plum that Tony, I know, brought me from market today. I mean, it's just like, I walk in there and it's just this gorgeous display of color. Mirabelles, and oh my gosh, yeah. Oh, and we got cantaloupe at market. Did you get honeydews today or no?
No,
yeah.
I got you spectacular yellow watermelon.
Oh my gosh, yellow watermelon. So yeah, or you could just do a big fruit salad if you're like, I don't know if I want to deal with seafood. So that would be fun and gorgeous colors and.
For sure. This crowd, I've made the watermelon feta mint pistachio lime dressing salad for
right
them,
on.
And they really loved it.
Oh,
so.
That sounds so good. That sounds
great. Yeah.
Good.
Love
it.
I could do that. Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for today's topic and thanks for the idea. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks Anne, for calling in. Good to talk with you.
Thank you.
That's fun.
We've got a couple of quick emails.
Okay.
What was your favorite food program on TV years ago?
Oh, my gosh.
From Bob and Fullerton.
I know what mine was. I loved Julia Child. I just loved her. I mean, I don't know. I think I kind of thought she was like my mom. And there was just something very identifiable for me with her. I felt so comfortable.
Honestly, the hairdo is not way off.
No, that's true. She's a little taller than my mama, but
she's a little taller than me,
like a foot. But I loved her, and I remember we watched The Galloping Gourmet a little bit. I mean, I think it was pretty. We must have been pretty little when that was on. I have a reference of that in my mind.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can hear that man talking.
He was spectacular.
Yeah, and those are the only ones I really remember, quite frankly. But I loved Julia Child when I was a little girl.
The ones that got me, Pierre Frenet, his program.
Mm-hmm.
Was amazing, you know, cuisine rapide. He was just trying to fly, you know, do quick stuff. But he was definitely, he came into work, one of the first restaurants I worked in. He came in not to work, he came in to eat as a guest.
Ooh, fun.
And,
that's awesome.
And he wanted French wine, and like nobody working in the dining room knew French wine. I went and found him a bottle of Sambarin from the kitchen, you know.
Oh my gosh.
So, wow. So he could drink something he liked because he did not want.
Mm-hmm.
That American stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He deeply did not want it.
Okay.
I also always loved Jan Ken Cook.
Okay.
I mean, frankly, besides his ridiculous behavior, there were
fun
good tips in that. There were good, solid.
I like those old cooking shows.
Tips in that.
Well, and I think that's the thing with the Food Network. I mean, you know, people always ask me what I'm like, I live that life. I don't need to watch the Food Network, but. I mean, I would watch anything that taught me something. So, I mean, from that standpoint, I mean, that to me is the most valuable sort of stuff. I don't need to be entertained by the Food Network, but I do need to learn. So,
oh, yeah. Everyone at work is so entertaining. Let's take a call from John in Parkville. John, go ahead.
Hi, John.
Yeah, everyone at work is so entertaining. Let's take a call from John in Parkville.
Hey, John, can you turn your radio down, please?
Hey, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you now. How are you?
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, because I'm on my cell phone here. All right. Yeah. Bonjour, Monsieur Foreman and Mademoiselle Wolf.
So what have you got, John? What's the question?
Yeah, I love your program. So specifically for Cindy, you mentioned, the question is for Miss Wolf, when you mentioned what you see on the screen is different than the preparing for the show or the program.
Yes. Well, you know, they have to edit the show. So that's, I think, some of the biggest differences, you know, probably some of the length of the day and all the filming. And, you know, it's kind of amazing to watch it get edited down to whatever it fits into, 30 minutes or an hour. I think the shows I've been on have been an hour show, which is great. It's definitely very different from doing it and what the final product is. It's always exciting to see, though.
Do you recall the first time you did a cooking segment or an appearance?
Yes, I do. It was in D.C. And weren't you there? Were you there? I can't remember. One of those. It was a local channel. What was horrifying for me, because I've done a lot of performance stuff in my life. I've always been very, very nervous. You know, there was that piano recital when I was, 10 or whatever, and I forgot what I was supposed to be doing, which, will live with me for the rest of my life, that fear of, and then total blank. So I've always been nervous. And that show, that TV show, had a live audience, which I didn't know when I went in to do it. And I was horrified when I got there.
Oh, geez.
So that's sort of always been my goal, was to continue to perform so that I would get past that. Well, I was talking to somebody the other day about the show, and how when we first were on a radio show with Dan Roderick, I would come into the studio and be nervous. And then, after you do it, the more you do it, the more, like
Dan
right
is the
now,
most relaxing guy in the world.
It didn't have anything to do
Happy
with
Sunday, Dan.
Dan. It was just, I was nervous being on live radio. And now I don't even think, I do think about it, but I don't get nervous at all. So the more you do something, that first show I did was, I can't remember what the TV station was, but it was in D.C. And I think I did a demo. Yeah, I definitely did a demo. But what were you asking me about it? Just, do I remember doing that?
Yeah, or? Just if you, yeah, what was, I mean, the first one?
I was like super excited to do it.
You're talking about like 1992 maybe?
Yeah, well, four. It would have been 93. Sorry, 93.
Yeah.
Because it was for, the restaurant that we opened in D.C.
So we're gonna take a quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to get into food photography and food images with Scott Suchman. And we can run through his resume when we introduce him when we come back on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And now we want to spend a little bit of time focusing on the world of food photography. Remember, we're live today. You can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wypr.org. Scott Suchman's a photographer who's lived and worked in Washington, D.C. for more than 20 years. He specializes in food, travel, and portrait photography. Scott's been a contributing photographer to Washingtonian Magazine, has worked with the Washington Post Magazine, Baltimore Magazine, Southern Living Magazine, Travel and Leisure, Garden and Gun, all the stuff that
Many
you
others.
Want to be in, Cindy.
It's amazing. Absolutely.
And you can see his work at suchmanphoto.com, S-U-C-H-M-A-N, or you can follow him on Instagram at Scott Suchman. Hey, Scott, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott.
Hey, Tony, Cindy, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I'm so excited to talk with you.
Before we get going, I want to say something real quick, Cindy. You mentioned the Galloping Gourmet.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening in, and it just took me to this flashback of being 6 years old and sitting in front of our TV set and eating bowls of SpaghettiOs and watching the Galloping Gourmet every day, Monday through Friday, when I would get home from kindergarten.
Awesome.
Oh, God,
that's cool.
And it just took me back to the 1974 or whatever year that was.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. God, I hated those SpaghettiOs. I think I was just
always
offended. There's so much sugar.
I would put garlic powder in them.
Garlic powder? That's awesome.
They're so sweet. Yeah. You could freeze it into ice cream. It's so sweet.
Oh, my gosh. Galloping Gourmet. Good
Galloping
memories.
Gourmet.
That's
anyway,
fun.
Yeah, so, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. So it's good to talk with you.
Maybe you've seen some of Cindy's photographs. She does some really cute stuff, really cool stuff. Mine are horrendous. So you don't need to talk to her.
The first step is admitting you have a problem.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
So for this is for people like me that cannot communicate. And the world has changed so much.
Sure.
And
sure.
And how food is communicated is so visual. So maybe take us through some, just first and foremost, some basic do's and don'ts.
Oh, sure.
Especially the don'ts for some of us.
The don'ts, first of all, if you're out having dinner, just enjoy your meal. You don't need to photograph it.
Oh, thank you.
You know, but anyway, if it's something you really want to do, a couple of things I always say. One of the things, which is unfortunate, is the cell phone camera is probably the worst device for shooting food. Mm-hmm. It has the wrong kind of lens. It doesn't color balance very well. It's just not a great device for shooting food. So if you really want to be serious about it, buy yourself a camera. It does not have to be an expensive, professional-grade camera. Mm-hmm. Just a real camera with a real lens on it that you can focus and make all these adjustments. That's something I would recommend. That's sort of the first thing.
Okay.
But if you're going to shoot with your phone, if you have a phone that has a portrait mode on it, go into that mode or get one of those little lenses that click onto your phone, because camera phones are wide-angle lenses, which are great for selfies and room shots and that sort of thing. But when you're shooting food, it's really not ideal, except for maybe shooting straight down. But any other angle, you get lots of distortion. So that's an important thing, is the actual device you're using to shoot with. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing I always tell everyone is, if you're going to go out to a restaurant and shoot food, or you're cooking at home and you want to shoot food to put in a blog or a post, get V to a window. Get the food next to an open window with daylight coming in.
Okay.
Because that, and Cindy, I'm sure you probably know that.
Natural light.
And Cindy, you've been around so many food shoots, and mm-hmm. you want to get that nice, clean, white, bright light on your food. If you're in a restaurant and it's 9 o'clock at night and it's a beautiful, romantic restaurant, and you're shooting your dish, it never looks right, right? It's orange.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
Rainy, it's, so, right?
Yeah, they're horrible pictures. Oh, my God. Yeah, I see it. I see them sometimes. I'm like, oh, no, that's my food. Look what it looks like now.
It's funny, you should say that, because I have had conversations with chefs, and we talk about that, and they'll say, oh, so-and-so was in here, and they posted a photo, and they hate it because they're like,
it's
my
horrible.
Food is so beautiful. Don't do this to my food, because other people see it and think I make ugly food.
Exactly.
And it could be some beautiful, whatever, you know, provincial dish or something, coq au vin or something, and it looks like something that was dredged up from the bottom of the sea, you know, in the photo.
Well, it's like an ill-lit brown blob.
Right, exactly.
Instead of some magnificent golden brown with all the...
Exactly.
You know,
so the thing is, if you're shooting, if you want to take food in restaurant, if you want to shoot the food that you're eating in a restaurant, make a lunch reservation and ask for a window seat.
Yeah. So
it's there, it's daylight, you've got light coming in from the side or from behind, which is a more flattering way to shoot food, and that's the time of day to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the real cardinal points that I like to tell people.
So what,
that kind of thing, yeah.
Since you, like us, have seen all of the change with social media and photography, What has that meant to you with food photography? I mean, how do you shoot differently now versus, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Oh, for sure. I think now the style of food photography is much more graphic and bold for us pros.
Mm-hmm.
The marching orders, you know, we're getting now from art directors, creative directors, is they really want like bright colors, poppy colors, graphic shape. So, you know, it used to be when I started out shooting food, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, and I was doing it, and Cindy, you probably remember this too, you know, we'd always shoot dishes coming in from the side or from the angle,
right,
you know, coming in at a beautiful rib roast or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
But now almost everything is shot from above. Why?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have beautiful circles of plates and lines of the flatware, and mm-hmm. so it's much more graphic when you shoot from above.
Yeah.
And that jumps out at you when it's on an Instagram post or on the website or something, or in pages of a magazine. So there's a more graphic sense that people want and color, and so that's definitely been something that we need to do. And also you'll find that there's some amazing amateur photographers shooting stuff. I mean, I follow a lot of folks on Instagram and who are just food bloggers. You know, they have a day job and then they food blog. But they do amazing work, and it's actually causing us photographers to really step up our game, because we want, you know, so we have to bring things to it that we know. We bring more lighting in and more post-production work to make our stuff really stand out. Yeah,
sure.
Absolutely.
Sure. How else has your world changed because of, you know, social media and everything?
I know it used to be, you know, sadly, I've been a photographer for 30 years, specializing in food pretty much the last 15 years, but... You know, I started out, it was all newspapers. Remember those newspapers,
right?
Oh, yeah.
And tons of magazines. And obviously we're switching to a more, tablets and online world. So, I'm getting assignments now from online publications that don't exist in print, and it's sort of learning some new language and learning sort of what their needs are and layouts and things like that. So that's changed a lot, who the clients are. Now I'm having, restaurants and PR firms hire me strictly to shoot stuff for social media, images that will never be printed on paper, but are just so a restaurant every week, every day, can put up dish of the day, and here's our new menu, and here's our cocktails, and getting a lot more of that than I did even 5 years ago. Yeah.
What do you see happening in the near future? Because as we know, everything changes like minute to minute. But what do you think is coming up? Right.
You guys know in the restaurant biz, you have to stay in front of people's eyeballs, right? Mm-hmm. You have got
They've got to hear your name. They've got to see your stuff.
Right. Excuse me, the pun, but this voracious appetite for food photography, right? What's happening a lot, actually, is, and I teach some classes every now and again down here in D.C., and the classes used to be, amateur photographers, food buffs, food bloggers. Now I'm getting general managers of restaurants are coming to my classes.
Wow.
The in-house, for a restaurant group, you'll have publicity people that work for you, or you'll have publicity firms that you hire. Those people who have never taken anything beyond a phone photo are taking classes with me because they need to produce imagery every day, and the budgets aren't there to bring photographers in all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to tell me I need to come to one of your classes.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah, you have to come down, yeah.
Yeah, Tony's...
So I'm probably doing one, I think, in the late fall down here, but I'll let you guys know.
Cool.
But anyway, so...
That'd be fun.
Yeah, I think that's the... How do they satiate this need for all this imagery? And it's good for photographers like me because the work is sort of nonstop, as you guys know. Restaurants keep opening. Some are closing, but more are opening, and they need work. And then the news media are covering these magazines, and they need to hire photographers to do stories on them. So business is good. I'm not complaining. But it's also constant. People need the pictures now. They need it tomorrow. The site goes live this day. So that's more intense. Yeah.
So we're talking to Scott Suchman, a prominent food photographer in our part of the country, and I guess if it's the Post and Southern Living and Travel and Leisure nationally. And we are live, 410-662-8780, if you want to get in. Or email us, foremanwolf@wipr.org. And I have a couple of emails for you, Scott.
Oh, great.
The first one is from Mizza.
Okay.
Mizza says, come on, call it what it is, food porn.
Yes. For sure. It's easy to... scroll through Instagram and just disappear into it, and it makes us all hungry. And it satisfies a lust that we have, right? it's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. As lust,
no judgment.
Go,
right?
It's okay.
And then the next is from Bernie in Charles Village. Do you approach a shoot differently if the end medium is a cookbook versus a magazine versus social media or web posting?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think. Well, a lot of times, yeah, I've shot a few cookbooks. I'm starting a new cookbook actually next week. And cookbooks, those are a big team effort. There's a lot of people involved in a cookbook, a lot of cooks in that kitchen. I'm sorry, the food puns are just coming fast and furious today. But
yeah, I'm giving you a pass. It's Sunday.
You guys are used to that, I'm sure. But, cookbooks, you've got art directors, you've got the people who are creating the recipes, whether they're a chef or whether they're, some other food professional. There's a lot of people involved, and there's a lot of people sort of deciding the style of the photos, how they're going to be taken, and so I'm part of a team at that point. Usually when I'm shooting stuff for a restaurant brings me in to shoot stuff for their social media or magazine hires me, I'm sort of my own art director. I just kind of come in and say, okay, the magazine I work for, I've shot for Bon Appetit, I've shot for Food & Wine, all of them, and they all have different visual styles. Okay. So I'm usually keyed into their visual style. So I know if I'm doing a shoot, I have a shoot later today for Bon Appetit, I'm shooting a bakery here in town, I know their look is different than if I'm shooting something for the Washington Post or Baltimore Magazine or something like that.
Sure.
So I do approach each shoot differently depending on the end result. Absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. For sure.
So what's your go-to? I mean, like a chef has a go-to, like this is the dish that everyone is going to like.
Oh, sure.
What is that shot that that This is it.
Well, usually, I tell you, we were talking about this earlier, the overhead right now is sort of the style. Everyone wants these sort of fun overheads. So that's almost always where I start with a dish. Now, having said that, not every dish looks great from overhead. A burger, a club sandwich is not going to shoot great from overhead. It's just a lot of bun. So for those, you know, you're dropping the camera down and shooting from the side. But usually, I start with an overhead. I tend to light stuff more than using window light, which is, again, that's kind of just riding a trend right now. Photographers are, because we want to differentiate ourselves from just food bloggers and stuff, we're bringing in a lot more lighting equipment. We're using a little more post-production tricks. So, not tricks isn't the right word, but techniques. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'll usually light stuff. And I like that sort of bright, poppy, punchy look. So that's usually where I start with something. If I'm just art directing it myself, that's usually my go-to. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So what is the craziest thing that ever happened when you showed up at a restaurant for a shoot?
Well, this is actually kind of funny. So I just wrapped up the Washingtonian Eat Great Cheap issue, which a lot of regional magazines do, you know, cheap, great,
yeah,
cheap eats, burgers and fries and pizza. And I remember a couple years ago shooting the Cheap Eats issue, and I was out in Annandale, Virginia, at a very small Korean restaurant, and there was not a lot of English being spoken, and I was able to communicate what I needed, and I wanted to photograph a bunch of dishes for them and for the magazine, and they understood. I brought a copy of the magazine, show, and they'd never seen it. This is not a place that was used to any kind of food media. Mm-hmm. So I came in, I did it, I shot a bunch of things. They were very sweet and very nice. And at the end, I got a bill for $80.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my
so,
gosh.
You know, usually it's sort of part of the process.
Yeah, don't give the photographer a bill, people.
And they gave me this bill for $80, and I looked and I smiled, like, that's fine. Pull out the credit card. Whatever. The magazine took care of it. Everything was fine. But that was just kind of a funny situation. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, you know, things like that kind of happen. And then another time, again, it also was for a Cheap Eats issue a few years back. I was photographing a really great taco place, Taqueria La Placita in Maryland, in Hyattsville. And I could not get anyone who spoke English on the phone. So my wife is Mexican-American and mm-hmm. is fluent in Spanish. So she called and made the arrangements, and on the day of the photo shoot, she came with us and acted as a translator. So we came into this restaurant to shoot a cover of a magazine. I had a food stylist, an art director, a photo editor, myself, and then my wife acting as a translator.
That's a lot.
And this is in Hyattsville, Maryland. And we ended up getting a great photo. It was a cover. It was wonderful. It was a great experience. But that was just sort of an unexpected thing for what I'm used to, for sure. Yeah.
I've got another listener question for
great.
You. From Judy in Parkville. Ooh. Do you really switch up the setting or color schemes of a shoot depending upon the food style, like a different setting and color pattern for cupcakes versus a plate of tacos?
Oh, for sure. I mean, so mostly most of what I shoot, I'm in restaurants. So I choose some studios type stuff for cookbooks and such, but usually my assignments are this new restaurant opened, go shoot this restaurant for a review or a story about Korean restaurants or whatever it is. So when I go to the restaurant, the first thing I do, I get there, I check in with everyone, and I get all my gear and unpack, and I walk around the restaurant, I look at all the surfaces. So here's a cool marble surface over here, here's some rustic wood, here's some metal over here. I don't say, okay, here's my wooden table, and I have to shoot five dishes, and every dish is on this wooden table. I will never do that. I'll do one on the wooden table, one on the bar. I mean, I'll find surfaces where sometimes I'll shoot on the banquette. Maybe it's some cool suede or leather banquette. I'll put the dish on the banquette because it's a cool color that complements the food. So 100% I do that. I look at the food and look at the environment and say, where can I get some complementary colors and textures and such, for sure.
So, Scott, what should I think about as a chef when I'm coming up with a plate up for a photographer to come in to shoot? What are the things I really should contemplate?
The number one thing I always tell chefs when I come in, and, you know, I'll come in at like 3 o'clock before service starts. Mm-hmm. You know, the kitchen's getting ready, prep is wrapping up. You know, we have our dishes to shoot, and they'll get to say, okay, we're gonna cook this, you know, whatever this is, lamb dish or something. And I'll always say, remember, it has to look good. It doesn't have to taste good.
Right.
So don't think about just get a nice sear on the meat. Mm-hmm. You know, just you don't have to cook everything through. It's just going to look good. You don't necessarily need to season it. unless, because if you put, you know, you put salt on stuff, it'll start, it can dry it up.
Right.
Now, a little Maldon salt or something like that that looks pretty is always great.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just throw in just regular kosher salt for seasoning, you may not need to do that. So think about the visuals. Just think about it having to look good, not taste good. And then also what I was saying before, like a lot of the photography we do now is top down. So visualize your dish when you're standing there and you're plating it, you know, sort of lean over the dish a little more and put your head and look straight down on it and make sure it sort of looks good to you that way.
Sure.
Because that's the perspective most likely a lot of food bloggers, food photographers are gonna go from. So, and another thing I tell chefs too is, the dish that you make me to shoot should really be the dish that you would plate for any guest that comes in. You don't want to all of a sudden make it different and then the guest comes in and says, this is not the dish I saw in the magazine. You want it to look the same.
Sure.
So don't try to make it overly precious, you know, if it doesn't need to be that way. If it's not normally that way.
Good.
For sure.
Like it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So now I have a pretty good idea why my food photography is not so great.
Okay.
I don't do any of the work.
There you go.
I'm just snapping the picture. So I appreciate all the advice.
Oh, for sure. You got to think it through. And I also tell people, you know, shooting food is like shooting a person. You know, people have good angles and bad angles. Food has good angles and bad angles. Certain lighting are good for people, is good for shooting a face. Certain lighting is good for shooting food, you know. I think sort of finding that and spending time looking at a person's face or learning their personality, looking at a hamburger and learning that hamburger's personality. What is it? Spin it around. Look at it from different angles. Take your time with it if you can, for sure.
So one last quick question. Are you a good cook?
I'm an okay cook.
What would your wife say is your best dish?
What my best dish? Oh, geez. I make a really good, I love working with chicken thighs. I love chicken thighs. Mm-hmm. So I do a lot of just like searing chicken thighs with garlic and white wine. The oil, you know, on in a cast iron, and then putting in the oven and finishing it off, and then some mushrooms. I love that.
Send us a photo.
I was just gonna say, do you ever take pictures of your own food?
Oh no, my plating skills are not as good as they should be.
You've got to take a photo post it on the website for the podcast for this program. So hey, Scott, thanks for coming on. I know we kept you extra time.
Oh, no, that's okay. No, it's my pleasure. I really appreciate it. It was great talking with you guys.
Yeah, thank you, Scott.
Of course.
Thanks.
Take care.
When we come back on Formula Wolf on Food & Wine, a few more minutes on the food media. We're taking your calls and emails, 410-662-8780, or email us, formanwolf@wipr.org. Welcome back to Foreman Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we're live today. We're talking about food media, food photography, and you can reach us 410-662-8780 or email us foremanwolf@wipr.org.
Mm-hmm. That was fun talking to Scott. He's amazing. Such a talented photographer.
He's shot some very cool stuff, and not just food.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, even just some of his architectural shots are very cool.
So does this mean your photographing is going to improve now, Tony?
I hope to God.
Golly. Yeah. Well, it is funny how things have changed in our industry and that has become something that is part of the day, you know, and how important it is. And when he mentioned that, you know, GMs of restaurants are actually taking, you know, his classes so that they can do some of the work. I mean, that's a big change.
It just makes me feel like a schmuck that I haven't worked on it.
I think you're fine. You have other things to work on. You have other things that you're very good at that are very important. So
no, that's generous. So if you were going to host a food television show, I wanted to ask, this is one of the ideas for this program. What would the show be like? What would the title be? What would happen on that program?
Well, the title would be Cooking with Wolf. And then I would teach
not
people
cooking
to,
with wolves.
Then I would teach people how to cook wolves.
You get howl. You get howl the way out
day.
Of this segment.
Every day, let's go wolf hunting.
The audience
hunting.
Could just go howling.
Woo-hoo. I would very, very much like to. I mean, it all comes back to the original question, Tony, which is, you know, what shows did you like when you were a kid? I loved Julia Child's show, and I think she did an amazing job of teaching people how to cook. And I would love to do that. I love what I do, and I would like nothing more than to share.
So really cooking instruction.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, there are just so many things that I've been, you know, blessed to learn. And the more you cook, the better you are at it. And, you know, a lot of it is instinctive for me because, you know, in the end, cooking is all about the senses and utilizing all of them. You have all these wonderful gifts with our bodies. I've talked about it before. And, you know, your hands are one of the best tools that you have, and your sense of smell and being able to see and hear and all these things, taste. I would really love to teach people how to cook and have fun with it, because I think that was also the Julia Child had a great joy for what she did and through her teaching. And I have a great joy for what I do. And I would like to share that with people and show them that cooking can be fun. And she, you know, I make mistakes, and I'm very, you know, I'm very open about that. I'm like Julia on that stuff. Yeah, exactly. And I am very similar to her in that way. I mean, if I fouled something up, I wouldn't say, let's shoot that again. I would say, let's show that, because
this is
that's
what
human.
Happens. What they,
yeah,
and
it's
you learn
human.
From that.
Exactly. And it makes it more, you know, she was amazing at how she made French food accessible to the American public. She made it not scary.
Well, because she made it in front of them and did it one step at a time. It wasn't
exactly.
perfect.
Exactly. Exactly. And that is real. And that to me is how a show should be, because, you know, people don't want to be made to feel stupid. You know, you have to be brave. And that is what, you know, honestly, doing a lot of real cooking is you have to be brave. You have to take a chance, and you have to try. And, you know, that doesn't mean you have to work with expensive product, but, you know, that is part of being brave is, you know, well, I'm going to buy that, you know, that beef tenderloin, and I'm scared to mess it up, but I'm going to try. Or I'm going to buy the chicken thighs like Scott likes. I mean, I understand why he likes cooking with those, because they have, and so do you, because I've heard
flavor.
You talk about it.
I was going to tell him.
Great
that,
flavor.
Hey, Scott, if you're still listening, go to the Formal Wolf podcast, and there are probably 8 different recipes for chicken thighs
from
over the
Tony.
Years on them.
yeah.
You know, there is so little cooking instruction on TV now, and that is how food TV started.
Mm-hmm. I think that's what it should be.
I think at least some of it should be. It's all drama.
Yeah,
it's all dramas
exactly,
and
yeah.
competitions, and it's very exciting.
Yes.
And it can be very entertaining, but it isn't actual instruction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not the old Jack Papin program or,
I love Jack
you know,
Papin's
or
shows.
All the things we talked about loving are all like how to make a dish.
Right. And, you know, they weren't dry. Those shows were still entertaining.
No.
They weren't crazy.
Well,
the Galloping
Gourmet was halfway hammered
oh,
by
my
the
golly.
Time he was done.
Well, so, yeah, well, so there. I guess that's what I'd have to do to be entertaining. Maybe
I
have to drink
while
cooking.
The two fat ladies.
Oh, my gosh. It can all be entertaining.
More
and there's a need for all. I'm not saying that every
no
TV
question.
Show should be instructional, but I didn't mean to put it that way. But indeed, I mean, I think it's just super helpful. And
I'm going to ask you
a
selfish question.
I want to see more
question.
People cooking. Yes.
So if I was going to host a food television program,
mm-hmm.
what would it be?
How to cook chicken thighs?
No.
Oh.
It would be like the old Johnny Carson show.
Oh, that would be fun.
You know,
the old Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that would be
because you know
so...
my attention span, right?
Yes.
I would need a series of people coming, and you get a conversation kind of going, and it starts with one like key person, and maybe it's a chef, or maybe it's a winemaker, or maybe it's a pastry chef.
That would be fun.
Maybe it's a farmer. Maybe like it's something connected to that.
Mm-hmm.
So, all yeah, right. there's now I've given my big fantasy television
okay,
show.
I like it. That's
and now I'm going to give you the shortest chef challenge
really?
Of all
wait,
time.
Wait, do we have time? Right.
Okay.
Okay, very fast. Oh, God, Tony.
Super easy.
I'm not going to say what the words are. I'm just going to figure this out. Okay. Yep. Okay, spinach. So I'm going to do a salad with green zebra tomatoes. You have spinach and feta cheese. And plums. Oh my gosh, that would be so good together. Dill and chives. Okay, so wait. So I'm going to do a little vinaigrette with dill. And you have clams on here and live crabs. All right, so I'm going to cook the live crabs. You have mirepoix, so I'm going to cook them with that. And,
4 minutes.
And then, oh boy, and then I'm going to make a stock with that. And I'm going to make soup. No, I'm going to make a broth with that, and I'm going to add your Roma tomatoes to that, a little bit of fresh marjoram and saffron. Oh, and you gave me tagliatelle, so I will not, the broth will actually get tagliatelle in it. Mm, crap. Stock. Open the clams. Add the Roma tomato.
3.5
saffron
minutes.
Saffron and the tagliatelle. That's one dish. And I don't know what this, what's this word? Bon, your choice.
Don't bacon, your choice.
Bacon.
I'm being
Ooh,
nice.
I'm going to add bacon to that salad. And then you gave me Yukon Gold potatoes, dairy, and annatto. Mm. All right, so the annatto I'm going to grind up in the mortar and pestle. And I'm going to cook the Yukon Gold potatoes with a little bit of annatto and butter because you gave me dairy. And I'm going to save some of the chives. I'm going to put that on there. And what am I serving
3 minutes.
Oh, golly. I feel like I'm on a cooking show. And I don't know. Oh, those potatoes will be a side dish for that pasta dish that I made. You're like, yes, of course you would do that. No, I'll make a separate salad with Yukon Gold potatoes. That's what's going to happen. That's it. All right, here you go, Tony.
You got it done
My
so
list
quickly.
Is a little smaller.
Oh, gosh.
It was probably
okay.
Very confusing for people what just happened there.
All right, peaches, plums, tomato, basil, cilantro, goat cheese, local lettuce, extra virgin olive oil, all citrus, your favorite bread, and scallops.
Just to throw the scallops in there.
Yeah, well, why not? Your favorite bread.
What is your favorite bread? For that dish that you're about to make?
What I'm going to make is going to be a... can I have some chilies?
Yes.
Great. What I'm going to do is take the peaches. I'm going to pickle them lightly with jalapenos. And I'm going to make a relish out of that with a lot of the cilantro. The lettuce and...
You have 5 seconds.
And no, come on now. 2 minutes and okay, 24 yeah. seconds or something.
Yeah, 4 seconds.
Hang on. I want to make a scallop sandwich.
To me.
I want to make a scallop sandwich with that pickled peach relish and the local lettuce and the extra virgin olive oil. And the bread for that, probably maybe something that's open-faced, almost like a giant bruschetta, a crostone in Italian we call it.
Oh, okay.
You know, so like a piece of olive bread, you grill it. That'd be great. The goat cheese, the tomato, the plums, the basil, that's an easy, quick salad drama. So here, you've got 2 minutes left.
Crostone again?
Crostone. Any other Italian food word you want
my
me to
God.
Say?
All right.
Almost
sorry.
Obnoxiously?
Mm-mm. No, what was in market this morning, Tony? No.
Oh, gosh. It's such a
super
spectacular
exciting.
Year. It's definitely the best
it.
Since 2011.
Go to market, everybody.
Yeah, that if you're missing farmers markets this year,
oh, you got yellow
it.
Watermelons! I'm so excited.
Yeah.
What else? Something else that's unusual? No.
No.
Peaches,
I mean,
but peaches, nectarines,
cranberry beans just started showing
oh,
up.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Okay. What about limas? Do you think those will be coming?
Nope.
Butter beans? No.
Yeah, just not yet.
Okay.
You're pushing the season.
But
the
so
earth gives us
done?
What the earth gives us.
Berries are done.
Berries are not done. You got more berries.
Oh, excellent.
You got more berries.
Okay.
So are you happy now?
I'm extremely happy.
I'm glad.
I can't wait for the yellow watermelon. Do you want to
I think
what
that's all
do?
We have time for.
Oh, all right.
So let's remind people, if you want to check out Scott, it was great to have him on the program. Look up his Instagram, at Scott Suchman, or suchmanphoto.com if you want to look up his work there. And you can look up our old episodes on the Formula Wolf page on the WYPR website, wypr.org. And there's a whole, I don't know, years and years of chicken thigh recipes and other things. And if you want to follow Cindy on social media.
You can follow me on Twitter as Chef Cindy Wolf and on Instagram as Chef Wolf.
If you want to see my spectacular photographs of my super cute children and my mediocre photographs of the food, it's The Real Tony Foreman on Instagram. And you can email us, ForemanWolf on ForemanWolf at WYPR.org. Thanks for listening.
Happy Sunday.